Welcome to Healthy Mom, Healthy Baby Tennessee, a podcast brought to you by the Tennessee Initiative for Perinatal Quality Care. TIPQC exists to improve health outcomes for mothers and infants in Tennessee through our quality collaborative that will identify opportunities to optimize maternal and infant outcomes across our state and is funded under a grant contract with the state of Tennessee. The Healthy Mom, Healthy Baby Tennessee podcast is designed for medical professionals and for patients and families across the state. We will focus on all aspects of the perinatal period with special attention to reducing our maternal mortality rate. This podcast is brought to you through a cooperative agreement with the Alliance for Innovation on Maternal Health.
Welcome to the Healthy Mom, Healthy Baby Tennessee podcast, brought to you by the Tennessee Initiative for Perinatal Quality Care. I'm Brenda Barker, the TIPQC Executive Director, and today we are so thrilled to have Dawn Stater and Rachel Duncan join us with the Naloxone Project. Rachel Duncan is a Colorado-based clinical pharmacist with extensive experience in opioid stewardship, harm reduction, and addiction treatment. She serves as the Associate Director of the Naloxone Project, a clinician-led nonprofit helping hospitals and other medical spaces expand naloxone distribution. She's led efforts in several states to establish maternal naloxone distribution programs for new moms after delivery. Rachel is also co-founder and chief clinical officer of EpiFluence and program director of Moms Plus, a perinatal quality improvement program that supports birthing hospitals and building addiction treatment infrastructure. She currently practices in a rural hospital setting. In addition, we have Dawn Stater, who is a board-certified emergency and addiction medicine physician and a national leader in opioid stewardship, harm reduction, and medication for addiction treatment. He serves as the executive director of the Naloxone Project and is the co-founder and CEO of EpiFluence, an organization that partners with healthcare systems and public agencies to improve care and health equity through data-driven strategies and policy innovation. Dawn is committed to expanding access to naloxone and strengthening rural addiction care systems. He currently practices emergency and addiction medicine at Lincoln Health in Hugo, Colorado. Again, welcome to both of you.
Yeah, thanks for having us, Brenda. It's a privilege to be able to speak to your audience today.
Thank you.
Yeah, super excited to be here.
Thank you. Well, we are super excited that you're joining us on the podcast, but even more super excited that you're soon going to have a presence in Tennessee. So let me first congratulate you on receiving the Department of Health grant for naloxone distribution, along with medical first aid kits to postpartum moms on discharge. Tell us a little bit more before we jump into that and the congratulations, just about yourselves and your career journey, just to let our audience get to know you a little bit. Rachel, do you want to go first?
Sure. And thank you, Brenda. Again, we are thrilled to have this opportunity to work with you and to receive that grant. It is always such an honor when we are awarded that opportunity to work with various audiences and states. Yes. Well, as you alluded to, I am a clinical pharmacist by background and have been practicing for about 15 years. Much of my background is in hospital-based settings, and so have a particular love for how hospitals operate and how they can really be a hub of healthcare within their communities. And through that journey, really started to gravitate towards opioid stewardship projects in the early to mid 2000 and 2010s. And then that evolved into a love for helping those with addiction through interventions like naloxone distribution and making sure folks had access to treatment. As a pharmacist, I get really excited when we have things that can help people that are evidence-based and are specifically medications, right? Because that's what I'm about as a pharmacist. How can we use these medications to help folks avoid overdose, avoid death, and potentially get into treatment? And as I embarked on that journey, realized how many barriers there are for folks to access these life-saving medications. And so that's really how I came to this work, was saying, okay, we have these pretty simple solutions, it seems like, but they're not being accessed. And how can I help folks access them? And so Dawn and I have been working together clinically for over a decade, and we were working in an emergency room in the Denver metro area when we came up with this idea of how do we bring harm reduction and naloxone into medical spaces. I think for so long, Brenda, it's been kind of something over there that we tell our patients to go over there and access if they would like it. And we don't always offer it along with all of the other medical care, behavioral health care, and addiction care that we should be providing. And so we really feel that those things should go hand in hand. And so I'm going to pass it over to Dr. Stater to chat a little bit more about his journey and how we came to be co-founders of the Naloxone Project. Don, you want to chat a little bit more here?
Yeah. So thank you. Thank you, Rachel. And thank you so much, Brenda, again, for this opportunity to speak with your audience. I'm an emergency medicine physician by training. So I'm going to actually just tell a little bit of the story of what made me so passionate about this patient population, specifically those who struggle with substance use disorders. But my first love was emergency medicine, and I've worked in an ER for going on, I think it's almost a decade. Before around 2015, I had a patient who changed my life and my clinical career. And I was working in an emergency department at that time when a young lady overdosed on heroin, which was the primary opiate that we were seeing illicitly at that time. And she came into the ED. She had had a pretty significant overdose, came very close to dying. And over the course of several hours, I gave her several doses of naloxone to resuscitate her, like I'd done countless times before when I'd experienced patients with opiate overdoses. But then I asked her a question that, like I said, changed the course of my career, which is I asked her, how does a young lady like you become addicted to something like heroin? And she shared a story where she said, funny, it was because of an emergency doctor like you who prescribed me opioids for an ankle sprain. And literally two patients before, I had prescribed a patient 20 Percocet for an ankle sprain and had always thought that I was really practicing wonderful medicine. So it was a significant realization. And after I tried to prescribe this person, the first person ever, I tried to prescribe naloxone and Narcan, which was recently approved, and it didn't exist in our computer system to prescribe. So I had to handwrite the script. And then I tried to refer her because she said, could you please help me? I really want to stop. I want to get into some type of treatment. And I tried to refer her to treatment. And the only thing in our computer system was Alcoholics Anonymous, which didn't really pertain to this patient. And it made me extremely angry. First, that I had never really gone out of my way to help patients who struggle with addiction. And it was a very stark realization for me. And two, that I had probably contributed a lot from overprescribing of opioids to patients developing opioid use disorder. So that patient and the journey that I subsequently undertook after made me very passionate about righting both my own incorrect practices, but then a lot of the systematic issues in medicine where we had neglected patients with substance use disorders, neglected this disease. And really, my career after has been a journey of atonement and of putting right so many of the things that we had done wrong in medicine, including the opportunity to give people naloxone in hand for when they did have an overdose or where they're at risk of overdose.
Thank you so much for sharing transparently just your journey and the work that you are doing. And we know our goal is really to keep that patient in the forefront of everything we do. So thank you so much for sharing, both of you. And Rachel, you alluded to you and Don first beginning to work together. Tell us about how the Naloxone Project was formed and just your journey.
Yeah. And so Brenda, Don and I were working in the same emergency department really as COVID was starting and the overdose crisis was also sort of all coming together at the same time. And so we really said, as Don talked about, these patients that we would see after an overdose in the emergency department and feeling like we really weren't doing them much for them and didn't feel empowered to do much for them, let alone send them home with some life-saving antidote that we had just given them, right? Someone is at such high risk of overdose after they've experienced a non-fatal overdose. We know that that immediate timeframe is very high risk. And so we said, we have to do better. And so we formed the Naloxone Project. And it was all about first starting with emergency departments across the state of Colorado, where we were working, and saying, I think that we can make hospitals and emergency departments naloxone distribution hubs. We don't need to be sending patients out with a discharge prescription for naloxone, because we looked into that quote unquote solution and found that the fill rates for those discharge prescriptions, particularly for our highest risk patients, are dismal, Brenda. My goodness, I'm talking about fill rates of less than 1-2% for our highest risk patients of overdose. So they're not running to me in the retail pharmacy to get that prescription filled. We really have to be handing this directly to them before they leave that medical encounter. And so we started building these distribution systems starting in emergency rooms. That was an obvious spot. That's where folks get a lot of care after an overdose or maybe if they're struggling. And so spent the next year or two really ironing that out in all of our Colorado emergency departments and making sure that they all had access to naloxone to be able to hand directly to patients before they leave that ER visit. And so we felt pretty good about that, making a difference. And then we started to notice some of the maternal mortality state reports that were being put out, both in Colorado as well as other states. As you know, always sitting on those review committees, those committees are really tasked with looking at deaths while a person is pregnant for the first year following pregnancy and saying, what is driving maternal death? And what we found is in our home state of Colorado, what we were seeing was that overdose and suicide were neck and neck, leading maternal mortality for our state, and that those causes combined were really more than all of the other quote unquote medical causes that we were seeing. We're doing a great job with obstetrical hemorrhage or eclampsia or sepsis, all of those things that we often worry about in a pregnant or postpartum woman, but we're ignoring these more stigmatized causes, behavioral health and overdose. And so we really made it our next mission to empower birthing hospitals to be able to handle naloxone directly to birthing individuals before they leave that admission, particularly their birthing admission. We know that so many of these overdose deaths actually happen in the postpartum period for women. And that's a really high risk point. And the overwhelming majority of women give birth in a birthing hospital. So that is a point to intervene and offer naloxone to these patients. And so we started working with the about 50 birthing hospitals across our state of Colorado to build and start these maternal naloxone distribution programs. And we called this the Moms Initiative. Yeah, we don't get very creative here with our acronyms, but MOMS standing for Maternal Overdose Matters. And so really helping obstetrical clinicians understand what we were seeing in the data and understand that we could be intervening and that we can empower clinicians to have a very direct and tangible response, right? I'm handing that new mom a life-saving gift directly to her before she leaves that encounter in the hopes that we could start improving these really devastating numbers that we were seeing. And Brenda, the maternal mortality data in Tennessee actually so closely reflects that of what we were seeing in Colorado, as well as other states that we've worked with. And so could definitely dive into that a little bit more. I'm not sure how much you all love to geek out on data, but I get a little too excited. So I'm gonna stop chatting and let Don chime in here on some of these efforts.
Yeah, we do love to geek out on data. And I also recall Don saying, although this project is aimed at our maternal mortality, our postpartum moms, that sometimes these naloxone kits actually benefit our dads as well. So let's let Don share a little bit more.
Yeah. And Brenda, the study that you're talking about was actually an interesting study done out of opioid treatment program, sometimes referred to as methadone clinics more colloquially. But what they found was in pregnant persons were given naloxone. More often than not, the person who was saved with that naloxone was actually the father. So it tells us several things, which is one, substance use happens within families, right? And that naloxone actually protects every single person in that household, whether it's the spouse of someone who's using substances or partner, or also when it's a young child who maybe get into a substance, licit or illicit, and have an accidental overdose, or even if it's a pet, there's lots of great case reports of naloxone being used on pets to reverse an overdose. So really, it's a very versatile compound that keeps the whole family safe. If I can circle back, though, to something that Rachel riffed on in terms of the foundation of the naloxone project that I think is really important, is when I started learning about naloxone and I started learning about harm reduction and overdose prevention from people who were doing syringe exchange in my community, it was really eye-opening. And I quickly realized that there are people outside of the medical institution who are doing a better job of caring for patients than we were within medical institutions, meaning they knew how to talk to people about how to prevent a fatal overdose. They knew how to counsel them with very common sense counseling. They knew how to talk with people about preventing HIV and bacterial infections and everything else that sometimes comes with either IV or substance use. And what I realized was, wow, that was something I never got in my medical school, that I never got in my residency, that I never got when I was a practicing physician, and significantly to the detriment of the patients that I took an oath to serve. So really, the Naloxone Project also prides itself in bringing up the standards of care that we have for our patients, and also bringing up that knowledge for clinicians, so that when a patient has a health concern around substance use, that we are knowledgeable enough to give them good advice. And we work with that across all types of medical populations. But one of those which is, I think, truly most impactful and, of course, most meaningful is with families and with new moms that might be struggling with substance use.
Thank you. And we are thrilled, as we mentioned, that you all will be coming to Tennessee. I know you've worked in other states. You may have some data, Rachel, as well, that you want to share. But tell us about any other data, anything else you'd like to share about the Naloxone Project, but also tell us what's going to happen in Tennessee and when can we look forward to you all being here?
Yeah, so we've been working within our home-based state of Colorado since mid-late 2022 and have handed out over, our birthing hospitals have now handed out over 6,000 naloxone kits to date. And that's been with a targeted approach for our at-risk patients. We've also done projects and pilots in Washington State, Wyoming, Louisiana, and partnered with several state perinatal quality collaboratives such as yourself to do this important work. And so we were thrilled when we saw this opportunity in Tennessee. To allude to some of the data that we mentioned, you know, when we look at rates of pregnancy-associated deaths due to overdose in Tennessee, it's really quite alarming here. You know, pre-COVID from 2018-2019 to those years 2020-2021, we really saw rates of pregnancy-associated overdose deaths triple. In the general population in Tennessee, you also saw it go up, but not by that much. It about doubled in the general population. So it really shows us that moms were at a unique risk, right? Sometimes I think our most vulnerable populations are most affected by those types of disruptions, right? We know that it inequitably often affects those that are most vulnerable. And so I really commend the state of Tennessee for noticing this and saying we have to do better, and birthing hospitals can be again, a hub of addiction care treatment and overdose prevention in their communities. And so they really put out this opportunity and based it off of some work done in Maine a few years back that really looked at a universal naloxone distribution model. And so when I say the word universal, sometimes we also call that opt out, right? So rather than, for example, what we've done in Colorado is offering naloxone based on at-risk criteria. So let's say a mom has a past or current history of illicit substance use. They use opioid prescriptions, right? They're on that for chronic pain, or they're on something like methadone or Suboxone for their recovery treatment. Amazing, perfectly safe for them, not safe for anyone else in that household. So again, those were patients we were making sure got naloxone. That's more of an opt-in type model based on risk-based criteria. Tennessee is really basing this off of some work done in Maine that did this opt-out. So they offer this to every new mom with education and allow them the ability to go home with it, or they have the option to opt out and say, no, I don't need that. No, I already have that. And oftentimes, even when someone refuses, I just encourage that clinician to be curious about the reasons and make sure that we're not misrepresenting, right, what we're trying to do, and really lean into some of that. But we'll be doing that universal opt-out approach with about 10 pilot sites. So currently recruiting with a lot of help from TIPQC to identify really those sites that are ready and willing to hit the ground running in early 2026 with us to go on a pretty accelerated timeline where we're ready to go. We want to support these hospitals. And so we're trying to get out over 20,000 doses of naloxone, right, in the year and a half of this timeline that we'll be working with these birthing hospitals. And so we'll first be asking for, hey, if you're interested, let us know. I think your hospital is a prime site to do this, or maybe have done this in other places like your ER, right? Or have done some pilot program like this, or just feel really ready. We want to work with you. We're going to start and really kick this off at the TIPQC annual meeting in March and have a nice in-person session there to say, to gather those sites together and say thank you. During that time frame of January, February, and March, we'll be working on recruiting those hospitals, helping them identify internal champion teams with key stakeholders, getting your pharmacy department involved on how we can help order all that free naloxone that we'll be providing through that generous grant from the Tennessee Department of Health, making sure that it gets to the sites okay, along with this first aid kit. So that was another piece that main study did, is in an effort to really normalize giving someone something like naloxone after birth, is pairing it with a first aid kit that has things like Band-Aids and thermometer, other things that you might need as you take a new baby home, in the hopes that more families would be willing to accept naloxone. And so we'll be providing that as well. We have a project coordinator that it lives in Tennessee that will be traveling around to sites, offering in-person trainings, and can, of course, do as many remote ins as you would like, working with a local OB provider who can also have those peer-to-peer conversations with clinicians, providing a lot of training resources, a whole toolkit, as we call it, of scripting prompts, right? Patient education handouts, videos that nursing clinical educators can upload to your own learning management system, like all of those different things that help support staff in getting the message and being able to have these conversations. So yeah, we're going to hit the ground running in 2026, Brenda. So as I said, buckle up and join us because we're excited.
We are excited to have you all join us. I just wondered, now this is really a kind of initial pilot. You mentioned approximately 10 hospitals. I know you have a 20,000 distribution, and that's not all diverse in Tennessee. But again, if someone was interested, they could reach out to you. We'll have in the show notes contact information. But also, once this pilot is over, do you have some outcomes you're hoping for during that pilot time, that year and a half?
Yeah, I can go ahead and tackle this. So I think that there's multiple outcomes whenever we do a project like this in a state, and multiple populations that we look to impact. So first, let's start with our colleagues who work in hospital settings, right? Our nurses, our doctors, our social workers. One of the biggest things that we want for them is we want them to feel well-educated on how to actually interact with and have a positive impact when they encounter a family who struggles with substance use. And again, these are skills that many of us have not been taught when we are going through residency or nursing school, et cetera. And learning and giving people these tools really empowers them. It changes the whole dynamic when we actually interact with people who use substances or are at risk for overdose for the better. The other, and of course, main target for all of us as clinicians, right, and people who work in healthcare is, my God, we want better outcomes for our patients, right? And what I hope is by giving out naloxone, the hospital becomes a friendlier, more welcoming space to a family that's struggling. And then ultimately, what we'd love to see is significant decreases in morbidity and mortality from overdose across the state of Tennessee. And I think that giving naloxone out is one of the most powerful things we can do to end overdose deaths among every pregnant patient and among every toddler who might get exposed to an opioid, having a life-saving antidote at home is one of the most powerful things we can do. And Rachel, I don't know if I can kick it back to you to actually share some very promising data that we're seeing out of Colorado. Because Brenda, we actually just pooled the maternal mortality data from the first few years that we've done Naloxone Project's Moms Initiative here in Colorado, and have some really promising data that we hope we'll be able to replicate in Tennessee. So Rachel, let me let you share that since you're the one who dug that out.
And yes, we do want to hear that great data. I can't wait. Thank you, Rachel.
Yeah, no, we were thrilled. And as you probably know, Brenda's MMRC committees work so hard to review these cases and really determine what was the cause and what were contributing factors and all of those things. And often data is delayed in being released to the public. So we've been really thrilled to, as we talked about the Tennessee specific data year over year, Colorado data looked almost identical. We saw overdose deaths triple between pre-COVID and post-COVID, really peaking in 2022, where we lost 20 moms to overdose, either while pregnant or in that first year postpartum. And that was when we had really announced Moms Initiative and started working with birthing hospitals in 2022 as it was peaking, knowing that this is what was driving it. And so by 2023, we had almost every single birthing hospital on board having these conversations, as Don said, empowering clinicians to feel like I can ask. Hey, do you need help? And I actually have something to do to help them, right? And so in 2023, we just got this data, maternal overdose deaths dropped by 60%. They dropped from 20 in 2022 to 8 in 2023. And that's ahead of national trends that did not drop until late into 2024.
I'm just going to stop you and say that is incredible. Congratulations. And think about this, mom's lives, husbands' lives, children's lives that have been impacted. Yes. Just incredible. Thank you so much for sharing that. Keep going, though. It's more.
Oh, Brenda, you know, I'm glad, because sometimes when you're in the work, it's, you almost have to take a step back and pause, right? And say, wow, we did this. And so many other amazing partners, our PQC here in Colorado, I wonder, you know, several peer organizations, just this is when a lot of folks started to lean into this. And we were one piece of that, but definitely very proud of it and hope to see that continue. But I share that with your audience to say that that is very possible in Tennessee and in other states. And this is a piece of it. And, you know, Don was talking about goals and outcomes for this. And of course, we want to see that same drop in Tennessee and other things. We want more moms that are struggling with a substance use disorder connected to treatment. And past studies around naloxone access shows us that folks are more likely to engage in treatment when they're offered things like overdose prevention education and naloxone. So we know that that's an effective way to do it, or at least start the conversation. And then I also think the other piece here for me is just normalizing naloxone. And that's what I love about this universal opt-out distribution program is it's even if someone's struggling silently, they're going to still have it offered to them. And my hope is that they are less silent about it by it being offered and knowing that we're a safe space for that. But normalizing naloxone in homes and in communities, in families, right? And I think a lot of times when we see this on the evening news and what's driving death, sometimes we can feel really helpless. And this can really empower families to feel like, hey, no, we can protect ourselves and we can protect our kids and our families. And that's really important.
Absolutely. Well, thank you so much for sharing that data. And we're so glad that you'll be able to hopefully replicate that in Tennessee. And we're so thrilled to have this opportunity. And as you indicated, Tennessee data is very similar. And so look forward to seeing more and hearing more from you all. And know that hospitals can reach out and contact you all if they want more information. And again, we'll have that in the show notes. But just wanted to thank you for joining us today. And just see before we wrap up, if there are other jewels that you would like to share with us today.
Yeah, Brenda, thank you. Thank you so much. Just a statement of gratitude to TIPQC, to the state of Tennessee for this opportunity that we'll have to work with you. I will say that I'm really looking forward to working in Tennessee. And I think that we have just such an amazing opportunity, right? What I think about this, both practically and philosophically, we have an opportunity to give 20,000 second chances to families out there. And that's a beautiful, beautiful thing. right? Everyone deserves a second chance. Everyone deserves to have life-saving medications at their hands if they were ever to be encountered with an overdose of a family member. And this is going to be a journey that I think people are going to find very enriching. So if you're a hospital that's just hearing about this program for the first time and you're not part of our original cohort, know that we want to work with you, right? We don't want to stop until every single hospital is giving naloxone out to at-risk families, to every single person and family that's struggling can have access to life-saving medications until we never see another overdose death in a pregnant person or family again, right? And when we finish that, we'll say, okay, great, our work is done. But until then, we're 100% committed as an organization to doing the work, finding partners, and saving lives. And we're just so grateful that we'll be able to do that in Tennessee.
Yeah, and I'll add to what Dr. Stater said, but I think first, we can't do this alone. We need our partners, including the Department of Health, including the Hospital Association, who's been a wonderful partner, including you all at TIPQC, who have already been incredible partners, the birthing hospitals and clinicians who will be there. Find those champions. If you are that champion, call us. We want to work with you, and we'll help you find the other champions at your hospital and in your community. And as Don said, this should be the standard of care. Okay. I know that we're asking you to be a part of a pilot, and sometimes that can be a little scary, but the hope is that we iron this out so that this is truly the standard of care for every new mom, new family to be able to go home with naloxone in hand. And so just asking for your commitment today to be a part of that, to commit to carrying naloxone personally and having it in your household and maybe getting your hospital interested in participating. So we would love to have you in the early rounds of this. So thank you so much for considering.
Well, thank you both for your time today. And hopefully we are all naloxone carriers. I know that we are in my family. And so looking forward to the lives that we'll impact and save with those second chances. So again, thank you. We couldn't be more excited to welcome you all to Tennessee, and I look forward to working with you. Hopefully we'll see all of you at the annual meeting in Franklin on March the 25th and 26th, and you'll have the opportunity to talk directly with Don and Rachel and their project manager. So thank you again for joining us today, and hope you have a great rest of your day.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Healthy Mom, Healthy Baby Tennessee, presented by TIPQC. TIPQC is funded under a grant contract with the state of Tennessee. Healthy Mom, Healthy Baby Tennessee is brought to you through a cooperative agreement with the Alliance for Innovation on Maternal Health. Do you have ideas for a future guest or topic, or even have a question you would like answered on upcoming episodes? Visit www.tipqc.org, that's TIPQC.org, and click on podcast to submit suggestions and questions to our podcast team. Make sure to subscribe to our podcast to be the first to know when new episodes are available, and find us on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and YouTube to stay in the loop with our active projects and other relevant news relating to perinatal health in Tennessee.